Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. The fundamental weakness of Western civilization? Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter. It is good to have you with us here today, Wednesday, February 25th, 2026, for the first day of our inspiration article for the month of February. And we hope that you all had an enjoyable Lunar New Year celebration last week, got together with family and friends, and we are back now for inspiration article. It's called The Philosophy of Empathy. The Philosophy of Empathy. And the deck says, is empathy a core strength? Here's what philosophy says. Well, we'll get into this today and talk about empathy, and we also will talk about the English in the article and review the vocabulary, give you a chance to practice it and hear it spoken and grow in your confidence in English. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist joining me both for today and tomorrow. Please welcome to the studio, Rhonda. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello, Peter. Great to be here.
Good to have you with us, Rhonda. So, empathy. Yeah, it's right there in the title. Let's just get that off, let's clear that up right now. Empathy. What is empathy, Rhonda?
Empathy is the ability to understand other people's feelings and problems. It literally means to feel with. M is the with part. Pathos.
Right.
To feel with someone. And that is an ability and something we should cultivate.
Right, right. It's an ability that we can all do, but an ability that perhaps we don't all cultivate. Another good word there, cultivate, meaning to develop or to grow in some way. And empathy, as we'll find out, has sometimes seen in a certain light in which it seems like it might be more of a weakness than a strength. And that's why in the deck there, is empathy a core strength? It puts it in the form of a question. Is empathy a core strength? There are strong cases for and against, so we'll try and get to the bottom of those today. But talking about core strengths, Rhonda, just to get us in the neighborhood here, what would you say, other than empathy, what is another core strength, another good habit or attitude to have for human flourishing?
Sure. A fundamental quality that helps you get through life is
right,
the question
right.
that I'm hearing. Courage comes
courage.
To mind. Courage, the ability to keep going even when it's difficult. I think sometimes for a lot of people, it takes courage just to get through one day if life is really hard.
Sure.
So we could use other words. But I think courage is a core strength, something needed in our very being to deal with life.
Yes, no, I would definitely agree with that. And courage as opposed to simple persistence. Persistence meaning just the ability to carry on in good times and in bad, or whether something's boring or whether it's exciting, you persist in it. But courage, particularly I agree with you there, Rhonda, because courage is going forward when you're frightened. Courage is Sometimes in literature, you may hear courage described as or misunderstood as the absence of fear. You know, he's just so brave. It's like he doesn't fear anything, he or she. But really, courage is when something is frightening, when you are face to face with something that is frightening or scary or you don't know what to do, but you still go ahead anyway. You go forward. You tackle the problem or whatever the case may be. And that is courage. When you feel frightened, it's not the absence of fear. That's sometimes misunderstood that way. And then people feel like they have no courage because they always feel frightened in certain situations. No. Courage is what you do with that fear. Do you let it hold you back? Do you let it inhibit you? Do you pull away from the problem, or do you go into it, even though it is challenging or frightening? That's courage. A core strength, another core strength that I would suggest is trust, which sometimes takes courage, but the ability to trust other people, particularly, you know, in human society where we have, you know, we are a social people. We need each other to some degree on some level, and that means we need to be able to trust each other. And we all know that we don't always act in a trustworthy way, sometimes in a big sense, sometimes in a small sense. But trust is always difficult because it requires us to risk being hurt. It requires us to risk losing, to risk being disappointed. It doesn't guarantee we'll be hurt or disappointed, but it does mean we're willing to take that risk when we trust someone. But when we do trust someone, that's how we grow in relationship with that person. That's how we accomplish things together. You know, when a team of some sort comes together, they trust each other. They can accomplish great things, you know, in sports or, you know, in the office, as long as there is trust there. So various core strengths that go into human flourishing. And today we are going to talk about empathy and listen to the case for, or rather the question as to whether empathy is indeed a core strength. We'll do two readings today. So again, if you have your magazine, grab it and open it to the Inspiration article, February 25th. And let's go into our first reading on the philosophy of empathy.
The philosophy of empathy. Is empathy a core strength? Here's what philosophy says. In an interview with podcaster Joe Rogan, billionaire Elon Musk offered his thoughts about what motivates political progressives to support immigration. In his view, the culprit was empathy, which he called the fundamental weakness of Western civilization. Empathy can make people weaker. Empathy fatigue is a major source of burnout among counselors, nurses, and even neurosurgeons. These professionals devote their lives to helping others, yet the empathy they feel for their clients and patients wears them down, making it harder to do their jobs. However, we believe that at its core, empathy is a form of mental strength that enables us to better understand the impact of our actions on others and to make informed choices.
Okay, so we start off here with a couple celebrity name droppings. In our very first line, we read, in an interview with podcaster Joe Rogan, billionaire Elon Musk. Elon Musk was his guest this day, and billionaire Elon Musk offered his thoughts, Rhonda, about what?
About what motivates political progressives, so a certain group of people, what motivates them to support immigration. Now, a progressive, and this is particularly in American politics, we use this word,
right. Meaning
a person who believes that society is strengthened by greater economic, political, and social equality through combined action by the state and the individual. So the progressives or the Progressive Party is a political group and it's a political philosophy, you could say.
Right, right. And it used to sort of be called liberal, or at least there were overlaps with the two terms. But progressive today in particular is contrasted with conservative, what is generally called conservative, who also seeks, to strengthen society. And I think the conservative would, support greater economic and political and social equality, but less so by action of the state and more by action of the individual. perhaps political equality is harder to achieve on that level. But that is one of the main ways to distinguish between progressive and conservative is the role of the state, the role of government in making life better for the people. Conservatives generally say less government, let's not raise so many taxes because people can decide what to do with their own money on a local level better than some government people off in a whole nother city. Whereas progressives will say, well, yes and no. Progressives would say that we need strong government because it can do things by virtue of its size, because it is such a large and well-funded by taxes body, that it can accomplish things that can't be accomplished on the local level, no matter how well-intentioned the people are. So that's the beginning of a whole other political discussion, which is not our topic today, but just to give you a sense of the basic difference between progressive and conservative. So yeah, Elon Musk talking about why progressives support immigration. And in his view, as he related to Joe Rogan, the culprit was empathy. Culprit, interesting term to use there. It means the guilty person or the criminal. The police finally caught the culprit who had engineered the string of bank robberies, and it turned out to be, you know, so-and-so. The culprit for Elon Musk was empathy. So it's kind of a loaded statement there in that it is implying that it is a crime to support immigration. But Elon Musk, who is not a progressive, would, I think, lean that way. And so the authors of the article are kind of a little tongue-in-cheek there by implying that it is a crime to support immigration rather than just a difference in political views. And for Elon Musk, the culprit was empathy, which he called the fundamental weakness of Western civilization. You heard it in our tagline today, and these are the words of Elon Musk on empathy, the fundamental weakness of Western civilization. Rhonda, is there a kernel of truth to that?
Well, you're asking me. I think the word weakness is what's controversial here. And we see in our next sentence, empathy can make people weaker. I think the word weakness and weaker is being used in the sense of ineffectual, not effective. No, I would not say it's weak as in wimpy or bad to be empathetic, but think the issue is, does that help people to live effective lives if they feel too deeply other people's troubles?
Right, exactly. And it goes on to give examples of people who, for whom empathy is an important part of their lives, such as counselors, nurses, even neurosurgeons, surgeons who operate on the neuro system or brain surgeons in some cases. Empathy fatigue. Term in quotes there, empathy fatigue meaning tired or weary, brought about in this case by empathy. Empathy fatigue is a major source of burnout among counselors, nurses, and even neurosurgeons. These professionals devote their lives to helping others, yet the empathy they feel for their clients and patients wears them down, making it harder to do their jobs. So yeah, the opening sentence there says empathy can make people weak or weaker, but that's not exactly the same thing as saying that it is a weakness, either in an individual or of an entire civilization. And then it goes on to say, however, we believe that at its core, empathy is what, Rhonda?
A form of mental strength that enables us to better understand, and this is key, the impact of our actions on others, and we make better choices. We have better information.
Right, or to make informed choices, that our choices will be supported by, they will be based on knowledge, based on wisdom, as opposed to just making a choice. To make an informed choice is to make a choice with, you know, more thought behind it than just arbitrarily choosing A or B. And just to be clear, the paragraph, it says, however, we believe that. Sometimes we can be used to mean both the author and the reader and the wider audience that the author is speaking to. In this case, it refers to the authors of the article. However, we believe that, and I just wanted to point that out because we got this article from a website called The Conversation, which accepts submissions like this and makes them available for republication, but not with the necessity of having to cite the original author's names. But I wanted to mention them in this case just for our readers' edification. The we here, the people who wrote this article, it's two philosophy professors, one Emad H. Atik, who teaches philosophy at Cornell University in the United States, and the other Professor Colin Marshall, who teaches philosophy at the University of Washington. So those are our authors. This is our question. Empathy, is it the weakness of Western civilization? We've already seen how it can make people weak, but let's go dig a little deeper now into our second reading and understand if this is the first time that people have looked at empathy as a weakness. Let's go into our second reading now.
The philosophical roots of empathy skepticism. The general idea of being moved by others' suffering has been a subject of philosophical attention for millennia, under labels such as pity, sympathy, and compassion. One of the earliest warnings about pity in Western philosophy comes from the Greek Stoic philosopher Epictetus. Feeling sorry for another person or feeling pity for them compromises our freedom, in Epictetus's view. Negative feelings are unpleasant, and nobody would choose them for themselves. Empathy would clearly fall into this category, keeping us from living the good life. A similar objection emerged much later from the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. Like Epictetus, Nietzsche worried that pity or compassion was a burden on the individual, preventing them from living the good life. Nietzsche warns that such feelings could impair the very people who try to help others. Recall the phenomenon of empathy fatigue. One psychological explanation for why empathic people experience fatigue and even burnout is that empathy involves a kind of mirroring of other people's mental life, a mirroring that can be physically unpleasant. When someone you love is in pain, you don't just believe that they are in pain, you may feel it as if it is actually happening to you. Empathy is thus difficult to bear precisely because being in pain is difficult to bear.
Okay, so in our deck, of course, we read the philosophical roots of empathy skepticism. Skepticism, an attitude of doubting that particular claims or statements are true or that something will happen. You could use it casually as in, I know it's pretty sunny today, but I'm skeptical that it will last. I heard a weather forecast that says it's going to rain by the end of the day. Something like that. I'm expressing doubt that it's going to be sunny all day long. I'm skeptical in that way, and it means the same when we're talking about core strengths, when we're talking about big ideas. I'm skeptical that empathy is a strength. I doubt it. I'm unconvinced. I'm not persuaded. Now, Rhonda, though, the question is Elon Musk the first person to be skeptical about empathy?
No, there are roots to this, and the philosophers throughout the ages have talked about being moved by others' suffering, empathy. And there are words they've used like pity, sympathy, and compassion. It says one of the earliest warnings about pity. Interesting, a warning about pity. In Western philosophy, that would be coming from, especially from the ancient Greeks, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Comes from, I'm going to say it wrong, Epictetus?
Epictetus.
Thank you. Epictetus. He was a Greek Stoic philosopher. Very interesting. Stoicism was a philosophy of ancient Greece and Rome, which taught that the goal of all questioning, of all inquiry, is to provide a type of behavior, a mode of conduct. Ugh, this is a long sentence, characterized by tranquility of mind and certainty of moral worth. So the Stoicism is a philosophy, and notice that tranquility of mind is a big part of the goal of the Stoic philosophers.
Right. The Stoic philosophy basically says, control your emotions, and that the key to life, I'm really simplifying here, but basically it can be thought of as the key to a happy life is to have tranquility of mind, to have not be led this way and that by emotions, but to control them and to be sure of your moral worth. And as the article tells us, this skepticism about empathy, we mentioned, Rhonda mentioned the ancient Greeks, it's been going on for millennia. A nice word there, millennia, that is the plural of millennium, and it simply means a period of 1,000 years, a Latin word for 1,000 years. So millennia, the plural, means more than 1,000 years, several, a couple thousand years, going back at least to the ancient Greeks. And so, yeah, Epictetus' point is that if we feel sorry for another person or feel pity for them, it compromises our freedom. It interferes with our freedom because now we feel sorry. Now we feel kind of unpleasant by feeling another person's sorrow. Negative feelings are unpleasant. Nobody would choose them for themselves. Hey, how would you like to feel today? Would you like to feel positive or negative? Imagine if we had that question when we woke up each morning. We would choose the positive feelings, of course. No one would choose negative feelings. They just, you know, happen to us from time to time. And empathy leads us to negative feelings, though. So this is one reason why philosophers have sometimes been skeptical that it is a core strength. And then we read that a similar objection arose in philosophy much later with the German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. So this is the 19th century now, skipping ahead a couple millennia. But like Epictetus, Nietzsche worried that pity or compassion was a burden on the individual, preventing them from living the good life, again, by introducing all these negative feelings into their life. In fact, Rhonda, it says, Nietzsche warns that what?
That such feelings, these feelings of compassion, could impair the very people who tried to help others. Impair would mean to somehow limit them or cause them to be ineffective. I do not think I would want to be friends with someone who is trying to control their empathy or control their ability to feel for the other person. So their philosophies make me skeptical, Peter.
Okay. Well, the authors have anticipated you here because our very next paragraph says, recall now, remember the phenomenon of empathy fatigue that we talked about back in the first section. Empathy fatigue, one psychological explanation for why empathic people, people who practice empathy, why empathic people experience fatigue and even burnout, which is not good, no matter how you cut it, is that empathy involves a kind of mirroring of other people's mental life, a mirroring that can be physically unpleasant, which is a good description of empathy when you get right down to what is it, never mind is it good or bad, but what is empathy. And it does mean mirroring. You know, we look in a mirror and we see a reflection of ourselves. So to mirror someone or something means to reflect it in some way, to when we ourselves act as a mirror and reflect back what this other person is doing or thinking or feeling. And if that person is doing or thinking or feeling something unpleasant, then if we mirror them, we too will feel unpleasant to some degree, not, of course, to the same degree that they are, but to enough of a degree that we will feel it. You know, it won't. We won't just observe, oh, I see you've broken your leg. We will feel badly for them. We won't feel like our leg is broken, but we will feel badly for them because we know they are suffering from that broken leg. Just to round off that paragraph, it says when someone you love is in pain, you don't just believe that they are in pain. You may feel as if it is actually happening to you. Rhonda?
I was just going to say something we often say in English is, I feel emotionally exhausted. And that phrase we tend to use when we've been with someone who has suffered. Maybe we've been listening to them. My mother just passed away, and I was with my father recently, whom I love so much. And of course, I feel for him, but there's a sense in which it's emotionally exhausting to be with someone else that you're trying to help. So it's great to care and feel empathy. This is a way in English we often describe that empathy fatigue. We don't say, I have empathy fatigue. We might say, Peter, I'm just emotionally exhausted. Would you agree that that's more likely the way we would say it?
In terms of how we would say it. Yeah, we'd say, I'm exhausted. I'm emotionally exhausted. I'm drained. I'm weary of, you know, dealing with this person's issues. And yet, that is what a good number of people do for a living. Again, going back to the first section, counselors, nurses, neurosurgeons, people in related fields are dealing with people who are suffering, people who are in pain, people who are struggling with things. And to properly help them, they can't just cut themselves off completely from what that person is going through, or they won't completely be able to understand them and won't be able to completely help them. But that does mean that, you know, burnout is a possibility because, like I was saying, we generally choose positive feelings for ourselves as we live our lives, as we seek to have good lives. And negative feelings seem to, you know, we never choose them. They just sort of come to us from time to time with the various hardships and twists and turns that our life takes, but we never seek them out. But people who are dealing with empathy fatigue are generally in situations where they are seeking out those negative feelings, not because they enjoy having negative feelings, but because of the nature of the work they do. They work with people who are in negative situations, doctors, counselors, nurses. So it comes with the territory, and you can only take so much. And a lot of professionals, healthcare professionals, experience burnout in part from empathy fatigue. And so that can lead at least philosophically to the question of whether empathy, you know, is a good thing, period, full stop. Because as we see here, empathy can weaken people, which, like Nietzsche warned, could then impair people who are trying to help people. People with good intentions, not just people who want to live their life and not experience any negative feelings and just sort of live in their own little world of comfort and pleasure. People who want to help other people. Nevertheless, if they're unable to control their empathy, it may do more harm than good. But that is as far as we can go with the topic today. Thank you for joining us, readers. We invite you to come back tomorrow for day two of our article on the philosophy of empathy. We've covered the philosophical roots of empathy skepticism. So now, tomorrow, we'll hear more about the case for empathy as a core strength. Be sure to join us then. For today, I'm Peter.
I'm Rhonda.
Saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.